Welcome to episode 74 of Chuck and Doug Reloaded. I'm Chuck Stinson. He's Doug Colson.
Is this really episode 74, or are you making that up again?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Let's stop making up numbers and actually like figure out how many episodes we've done.
Why?
Well, I don't
it's
know.
It's more interesting for me to do this.
Just make up a number every time.
Yeah, it's like my great ball of yarn.
Yeah, that's good.
You think anybody's going back? There's no audit on this, you know.
Yeah, nobody goes back material, and says, by the way,
nobody, oh yeah, nobody goes back and says, let me check that. And then you don't get like in podcast jail for reporting the wrong episode or anything. So why that's not?
That's true. So, and actually you can steal that. I think I stole that from Dennis Miller. So there you go.
The ball of yarn.
Yeah. Yeah. Or maybe it was, actually, I think that's a Cheers episode. Maybe might be something Frasier said.
Frasier. Did you watch Frasier after Cheers?
I watched it. A little bit, but I can't say I watched it like religiously. Like I mean, I saw it. I mean, I didn't like it obviously as much as I like Cheers.
Like what old sitcoms stand up? Does Cheers still stand up?
I think the later ones do. I don't think the ones with Rebecca stand up. The ones, I mean, I can watch the ones with Diane, but just they seem more dated to me than the ones with Rebecca. I mean, they're all dated, but
yeah,
you know,
of course.
The ones I quote more of the lines out of are probably the ones with Rebecca and Woody than with Diane and Coach.
Did you like Diane and Coach better than Rebecca?
No, actually, I was more of a Rebecca and Woody fan, actually. I thought they brought a lot to the table. And nothing against Coach and Diane. I just thought the show was actually better. It got better with age to me.
So is there any sitcom that you didn't watch that you think kind of entertaining now? Is there anything from the past that you go? You may have never done that. I don't know that I have.
You know what I've watched a bunch of lately? It's not a sitcom, but The Wild Wild West with James Conrad.
Yeah.
Is it James Conrad? Did I get it? Is it right?
William Conrad?
No, William Conrad.
That was Cannon.
The guy. Yeah, that's to do with the karate chops. Big fat guy. It's big difference. Jeez.
I'll have to look it up now. Now you got me going to IMDb. I guess it's my fault. I started that conversation.
Well, I mean, but I'm fascinated by that show just because it's such a bizarre concept.
Yeah.
It's like James Bond set in, like, you know, 1875. It's just bizarre.
Did you see Will Smith movie?
I liked the show. Yeah, I did. And this is going to sound really weird because you would think that would be something that I would absolutely hate.
You kind of like it.
I don't hate it. I don't like it, but I don't hate it.
Like, would you watch it if you go past it?
It's kind of a guilty pleasure. Like, if I see it, I'll watch it for a little while. I can't say I watch the whole thing every time it's on. I mean, it's not Dirty Dancing or anything. I mean, it's not, you know, it's not something that when it's you flip by, you just can't stop watching it. But, like, if I flip by and it's on, I'll be like, oh, Wild Wild West.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, but I do like the old TV show.
It was Robert Conrad.
I said James.
Oh, no. Did you?
I said James. You said William. It's Robert.
Robert Conrad. Yeah.
Did you watch the, did you ever watch Baba Black Sheep with him? Remember that show?
A little bit.
I'll tell you something to watch, though. Go watch.
This is our quarantine stream early.
No, it's not, but you can watch this with him and, like, I think Telly Savalas is a bunch of other people. You remember Battle of the Network Stars?
Yeah.
There's a great one where they're having this huge fight over something that happened. I mean, like, Gabe Kaplan's in there. I mean, it's crazy. They're smoking. I mean, like, I think people were drinking. There's a lot of, like, sexist comments that would never fly today, but you can go watch that piece of history. It's a you know, we talk about like moments in time. You remember that you were talking about that last week, marking moments in time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go look up Battle of the Network Stars on YouTube. You'll get a kick.
Hang on. I'm taking a pill.
Oh, boy.
Sorry. Actually, it's a collection of them.
Geritol?
Maybe. Maybe. No.
Osteo Biflex?
No, it's just my morning meds, you know.
Oh, okay.
Get, do you take morning meds?
I do, yes. Yes. Yeah. I'm old, right. We talk about this. I don't have the box yet. That's when I think you've crossed over.
Well, I crossed over a long time ago.
Now, I probably could. I could probably use one more of those.
One, you need a box.
Containers, but, you know, yeah, there's – I don't have anything that has days on it where I pop the thing open and have to fill it up.
But I'm advanced. I do 2 weeks at a time. That way I only have to do it every other week.
Look at you.
Look at me.
Look at you. Wow. So is
this,
proud.
Is this a sports podcast or is this an old guy podcast?
I don't know. We start every episode talking about how old we are. We got to stop this. I keep telling you. And then we get dragged right back into it by talking about old TV shows. And then the next thing you know, we're talking about
taking your pills.
I mean, talking about you taking medicine for your prostate.
Prostrate. I don't take medicine for my prostrate. That is a violation of HIPAA if I did, but I don't. So there. Does Jennifer get on you about taking your pills? Does she say you need to?
Yeah, she's constantly on my case.
Yeah. You're wanting to get off of this subject.
Don't know why. Yeah, I mean, I'm figuring she'd be like, you know, don't take your stuff you're supposed to take. You know,
she hides it from
hiding
you.
It on me. Yeah.
And Margaret finds it. Margaret loves you enough to find it and put it back out.
You're supposed to take 10 of these at one time. I don't know why you're only taking a half.
Why does this say rat poison on it? Okay. So, since we talked, which was just actually a few days ago, earlier this week,
right.
Some big things have kind of happened. We're seeing some interesting things take shape, and the Southeastern Conference is really one of the things that we need to cover in terms of football. And they are just going to play a 10-game conference schedule only.
Yeah. So, you know, and again, this was one of the shoes to fall that I think a lot of people were waiting on. I mean, some of the other Power Five conferences have come out with their plan and schedule of what they're doing. But, yeah, we're looking at the SEC is going to play a 10-week schedule. They're going to have They got to fix that because, you know, everybody was playing 8 conference games. So you're going to add 2 conference games. They got to figure out how they're doing that right now. And there's some sort of plan where they're going to, you know, go over the last couple of years and figure out, you know, match teams up. So there's, you know, you don't have people getting just randomly hammered like, hey, you've got Georgia and Alabama on your schedule. That, you know what I mean? So they're going to make that work that way. I'm interested to see this, though, because it should be a lot of fun with it being conference only. You know, I mean, there's, you know, we've kind of complained at times about some of the non-conference opponents and what that's done. And, you know, they're not the most entertaining games in the world. You know, what effect will this have on Mississippi State and Ole Miss? We'd have to see, you know, from them and what that schedule may look like and the teams they're adding. You know, so it's with new coaches coming in, does that make it a little tougher? I mean, you know, if you were a Mississippi State and you're bringing in a whole new offense, same thing with Ole Miss, but, you know, you've got new offense, new coaches, all this stuff. I got to think it's going to be a little tougher to implement stuff when you don't have maybe some of those early tune-up games or, you know, I'm going to say it again, a Tennessee Martin to get, you know, figure things out, you know, when you're playing some of those non-conference opponents, maybe early in the season. So all these teams hitting the ground running, what is it, September 26th,
right? Yeah, September 26th is when they're going to start.
weekend. It's expected to end on what, December 19th, or the title game is going to be December 19th. That's 2 weeks later than
normal.
They normally have it. So, yeah, I'm curious to see how this is going to play out and how it's going to go. And again, you know, we'll see whether, you know, games have to be postponed and that kind of stuff. But there is a lot of I just listened to a different podcast with an interview, and they were talking to an NFL GM. But what he was saying is, you know, that they're all kind of, all the leagues are kind of working together, and they're all getting info from each other, and they're all kind of helping, you know, each other out. Here's what works. Here's what doesn't work. Here's what we're doing. So people are kind of sharing ideas and stuff. And, you know, I mean, with some of the precautions and some of the things they're making, maybe the NFL has a chance. And, you know, same thing for college football. Maybe they have a chance. You know, but I think this is going to have to be a constant deal. And you're going to look at, you know, there's going to have to be multiple tests. You know, guys are going to have to get tested probably a couple times a week, you would think, you know, to keep everybody relatively safe and to see how this goes. But, yeah, it is an interesting thing. I mean, what are your thoughts on them playing just only SEC games?
I like it. Of course, I'm skeptical that it's even going to happen. You know that.
Right.
But, I like it. I wonder if it'll change for the future, that they go, hey, this is a good model. We need to go to 10 SEC games a year.
Well, what is that?
Play two non-conference games. Just out of curiosity. I mean, I doubt it will, but it would be interesting because aren't you intrigued that you're playing a conference game every week?
Yeah, and I mean, you know, you're going to have some ups and downs against different opponents, but it's not going to be that, you know, oh, well, they've got essentially a layup this week and have 2 weeks to prepare for this game, or they're going to be able to work this. So it's going to be tough, I think, on these teams, and tough to, you know, build your schedules. And look, there's going to be a lot of teams that, you know, they pull off a 6-6 season, you might be jumping for joy with that. You know what I mean? It's going to be a true test. It's not going to be we backdoored our way into a bowl game.
Yeah.
You know, who's to say whether they're even going to have bowl games this year, but
yeah,
you know what I'm saying. But, you know, there's other ramifications also. What does this mean for the group of five teams? I was looking at one of the articles talking about this, saying that you look at Louisiana Monroe is the example they used, and they're losing games against Arkansas and Georgia.
Yeah,
that's a loss of $3.2 million in guaranteed revenue from them. They have an operating budget of $15.5 million.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's
so it's 20% of their budget.
Yeah, exactly. That's a pretty healthy chunk of change right there that just got flushed down the toilet because, you know, and we talk about those teams and those conference, and they play those games and those money games to make that money. I wonder if that has a decision on group of five teams and conferences and whether they decide to play or move to the spring or whatever. Because, I mean, do you believe that the teams that have announced that they're going to play in the spring are really going to play in the spring? Or do you think it's, you know,
I think they're hopeful.
We tried to play in the spring and it's not really going to work.
You know, it's I'm hopeful that they are. But,
would it
you
be
know,
cool for –
I talked to somebody about a different level. It was junior college yesterday, mm-hmm. and this is a former coworker that works at one of the community colleges now. And we were just talking about some things, and one of the things that she brought up was that, and I think this would be the same thing for the major colleges that are moving sports to the spring, along with sports that are already scheduled for the spring, is that at that point you get into logistics, you get into food, mm-hmm. you get into buses, you get into
right.
transportation, you get into all these other things that you don't really think about. You know, we just talk about, oh, they're moving football to the spring. Well, they'll just play on a Thursday or Friday night in the spring and Saturday right. night, and it'll be done. But there's so much more that goes into that, and if school is back in full swing come the spring, and they've got athletes that are there, well, imagine having 25 sports going on at once. You know, I mean,
and how unfair is that to your spring sports?
Right.
You know what I mean? Because we know what I mean. Football's always going to get top billing at most schools and that kind of stuff. And you really, you know, I mean, the spring teams already had last season canceled on them.
Yeah.
And, you know, now you're going to have football shoving them out of the way, you know, get out of the way. You know, I don't know. We'll see if the spring thing will work. I don't know if that was just a, you know, well, we'll postpone it and see where we're at that point. I don't know, but I'm real concerned what this means for the group of five. And, you know, again, we'll see if this works. But after that podcast, I've told you that I listened to that interview that I listened to with the NFL GM. It really gave me at least a feeling of that it could, you know, that maybe this might work, you know, with roster sizes and where they are, and they're planning for every, you know, problem. And, you know, you've got teams that are separating quarterback rooms to where the quarterbacks can't be anywhere near each other. So that, you know, and the same thing with
what about the offensive linemen.
Even some of those groups, they're breaking down into smaller groups and that kind of stuff. And there's not, you know, it's not going to be, it's going to be a lot of, you know, all the meetings are going to be, you know, video conference. They're going to be, you know, limiting time for people in facilities and that kind of stuff. So, you know, like I said, I mean, there's a chance, I think, that we'll see. I felt better about it, I guess what I'm saying is, after hearing all the plans that they have and all the different, we're questioning how they're going to pull this off. And it seems like they have thought of a lot of things. So, you know, and I'm sure there'll be new stuff that crops up, but, you know, we'll see.
Yeah. I'm skeptical that any of it's going to happen. And I'm, you know, we've seen a little bit of this in baseball already with the Marlins and how many positive cases they've had and what it's doing currently to their season. And there's a domino effect to that, obviously, because other teams are involved. But we still
have games, you know. I watched the Mets and the Red Sox last night. You know, there's still – I mean, we're still getting some games on. We're still – they seem to be – working through this. And the good thing is, you know, yes, the Marlins had a problem and the Marlins had an issue with some of their social distancing that caused some of this, but, you know, maybe that's the cautionary tale and maybe other teams are taking this and seeing what happened and maybe taking that a little more serious. And, you know, hopefully that was like, I don't want to say a warning shot, but maybe that was the, you know, everybody had to, whoa, okay, let's really, you know, clamp down on whatever and let's take this really serious if we weren't beforehand. So, you know, we'll see what happens.
Last team standing without a positive test is the World Series champion. What about that?
That's how you're going to do it?
That's how I'm going to do it. I'm going to say, you know, keep playing until everybody has to be
quarantined. Is there a way for the Astros to cheat when they're doing this?
Test results.
That would be something
you'd have to be
concerned about.
We'll get to baseball. We'll circle back to baseball here in a little bit. Okay. I want to continue on a little bit with this football discussion. You know, we see these high schools, Doug, that aren't playing, and then the officials and the coaches that won't be doing. You know, a lot of high schools have canceled their schedules. Jackson Public Schools here in the state. I think Greenville decided that their school system wasn't going to play. There's other ones out there. There are still some that are moving forward. But what's the tipping point to where you say we got to stop? Is it a positive test? Is it somebody being hospitalized? Is it and what? Like if I were to put it in your hands, Doug Colson, you're in charge of the High School Activities Association. What would you say?
Well, we can't be doing what we're doing right now. I mean, we can't be adding, you know, all these cases and that kind of stuff. And, you know, there was a report out that percentage of tests taken and, you know, how many people are positive off those tests.
Yeah.
I mean, it, you know, Tate Reeves was talking about they want 5% of everybody who's taken tests to be positive, or that's a good number. We're at 25%, you know, of people who are taking tests that are coming back COVID positive. You know, and that, according to what they're saying, is, I mean, that's like puts a third. I think there's like, I think it's like Arizona, Alabama, and I think us. You know, that's not a, it's not great, you know what I mean? Because they're saying that basically we're just testing people who are really, really sick at that point. And, you know, so how many people are walking around with it and that kind of stuff. I told you, I'm real leery about these high schools and that kind of stuff. I have a high school student at the house. I've got a wife that teaches in middle school. You know, so I'm double dipping here with my family, when it comes to schools. And I, like I said, I think they should be very cautious. I really think extracurricular stuff.
Yeah.
Is extracurricular stuff. I hate the fact that, you know, you would be shutting down football season. We know how huge that is, Chuck. You've done high school football for God knows how long in this state, and it's but you know how important it is to the community and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But I have a hard time, you know, just seeing how they're going to pull this off. I mean, I have a hard time figuring out how they're going to pull school off. I would think extracurricular activities is just extra risk at this point. And I just don't see how it's going to happen. I'm cool with them at this point, planning on doing it and planning on forging ahead and planning on, but I mean, at some point I think somebody's going to say, you know, what are we doing? Because if we're taking in, you know, 1,500, 1,600, 1,700 new cases every day. I mean, those numbers are going up. We're not trending in the right direction. I mean, if we were at 1,700 and, you know, a couple of days from now, it's steadily going down, that's one thing. But, you know, I mean, there's a lot of these schools. I mean, look, what Corinth is back in already. You know, there's some schools are going next week. I mean, some are going the 10th, the 13th, that kind of stuff. So, but it's all over the road on who's doing what. I wish there was a little more
uniformity to what the plan was.
And again, not uniformity from, you know, like, I mean, you know, don't treat a 1A school like a 5A school.
Yeah.
But, you know, can we treat all 5A schools the same? Can we treat all, you know, and then maybe go into, like, this community, even though it's smaller, the numbers are way up here. Let's, you know, figure out a plan of what we're doing here. But leaving it up to each school district to come up with their own plan and what they're doing, I just don't know if that's ultimately, solution for this.
You have to hope they're taking into consideration the what their community is facing in terms of cases and they may very well be. I haven't delved deep into it and to look at that, but
But the concern I have is, you know, and people keep saying, you know, oh well, kids don't get it as you know, it's not as bad, and you know, but kids are still getting it at a high rate. Kids are still spreading it. We've talked about, we don't know what the long-term effects are. But, you know, again, you're putting all these kids together in a school. If you have an outbreak, those kids are going to be bringing it home to their families, moms, dads, aunts, uncles, grandparents, you know. Never mind the staff. Never mind the staff's family. Never mind, you know, all this stuff. So there's a lot of things that need to go into consideration when it comes to this. I mean, you know, they were, I was just watching the thing where the head of the World Health Organization was complaining about young people. And I'm assuming they were talking about like 20 somethings, you know, and not caring as much and spreading it around. And that's part of the problem. Well, you know, if 20 somethings don't care,
right.
You know, I mean, are you going to put a bunch of, you know, 5 and 6 year olds and 10 year olds that really don't probably know any better. And then even teenagers and that kind of stuff. Think about you when you were in high school, you knew everything, didn't you?
Yes.
I know I did.
I still do.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
I don't.
But you understand what I'm saying. I mean,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Is the adolescent brain going to always make the right decision? They don't do now.
Well, so when you talk about that and you talk about the 20-year-olds, I mean, that's college age for, so you know, a good, the first couple of years in your 20s are college age.
Yeah.
So college football is extracurricular. What's the difference in terms of why is college football? And they said what Rutgers had like an outbreak. And it was related to a camp on campus party or a party around campus or something.
Well, and that's a concern. I mean, you know, I think that's a big question also. Again, it's one thing for, you know, professional athletes to make that decision and professional athletes to decide, well, I'm going to play or I'm not going to play or I'm going to, you know, I think that's one thing. It's another thing to have a, you know, college kids make that decision and, you know, high school kids to make that decision for an extracurricular activity. I mean, I understand what you're saying. College football, especially the Power Five and even Group of Five, I mean, it's big money stuff. We know that. And that's why they're trying to play because of television contracts and all that stuff. And again, I think just in general, I think we all want to get back to some sort of normality.
Yeah.
But are we going to be able to really do that? I'm just looking at this and I'm like, the numbers are going, we got numbers going through the roof almost or going in the wrong direction at least.
Yeah.
And we're trying to cram people back together. And I just don't see how that's gonna happen.
We pull kids out of school when the cases were at about 100 a day.
Right.
They just hit 1,700.
Yeah.
As we start the day before we're doing this podcast, the 1,700, yeah. And it's been over 1,000 essentially, very consistently recently. So I'm not sure I understand. But, you know, they talk about young people not being affected, but there's teachers in there that aren't young that could be affected. I don't know. I don't know what the
answer is. Well, again, but that's what I'm saying. I mean, you've got teachers and families.
Well, you've got, again, especially in your house.
But it's not even that. It's about, you know, like I said, it's about kids that do catch it and them spreading it and them, you know, I mean, that's what it's about. I mean, yeah, you may be able to go somewhere and, you know, not catch it, but are we putting people together where potentially we can have something? Now look, my daughter had band camp and I dropped her off and they were taking temperatures and doing all that stuff there. And, you know, that's great. But, you know, again, it's just the potential is there for it to get much worse, I think, with where we're at right now. And it, you know, if you listen to Dr. Dobbs and you listen to the governor and what he's saying at certain times, you know, doesn't sound like there's a bunch of room at the hospitals. It doesn't sound like we're certainly not trending in the direction that we're trending in, where I think I'd feel good about all these schools opening up and being raring to go.
I'm depressed now.
I'm sorry.
Let's go back to our old guy talk.
We had a good conversation going, and then you brought it into COVID. Thanks.
Harvey Updike passed away recently.
Get this edited out. Well, Harvey Updike passed away.
I'm not laughing at Harvey Updike passing away. No. I'm laughing at the transition there.
No, yeah. But
an infamous name in college football, and probably one of the most unique stories you've ever heard, with the poisoning of the Oaks at Toomer's Corner and at Auburn, and had a it was a felony.
Huge Alabama fan, obviously, and you know, yeah.
I mean, his son's name is Bear, and his doesn't he have a daughter named Crimson? I think
Crimson. Yeah, he's a former Texas State Trooper, I believe. Yeah. But you know, we all know the story. He poisoned the trees at Toomer's Corner that the Auburn fans would roll as a tradition, yeah. And you know, he went on the Paul Feinbaum show and bragged about it. And people didn't know whether he was serious or not at the time. Well, he was serious.
He was dead serious.
He certainly did it.
No pun intended.
Got into some trouble for it, obviously.
70 days he served.
He was charged with a felony and had to serve time. Had a lot of money he was supposed to pay back.
That he didn't.
He was able to pay.
He didn't.
All that back.
He paid $6,900 of $800,000 that he owed. That he was ordered to pay.
Mm. Should the Alabama athletic department have to pay that?
No.
Should Nick Saban have to come off some cakes?
Yeah. No, that's what want. No.
I mean, no. Because let's be honest.
It's not the university's responsibility.
No, it is the university's responsibility.
That
it's
is untrue.
It's somebody's responsibility because this is the problem. And this is what I got into with people at that time. And this is what I always used to fight with people about, and Alabama fans especially, because Alabama fans want to act like, oh, this stuff's so normal. This is so – like the Harvey Updike thing is just – this just happens. It's just rivalry. It's just, you know, like, oh, you know, everybody's fan base shoots family members because of games that were lost. You know, every fan base has moms that jump over rows of seats of people at games to fight some frat boys. You know, all these things that happen with Alabama fans, right? And the number one thing being Harvey Updike poisoning the trees at Toomer's Corner, they all try to play – not all, but a lot of Bama fans try to play it off as like, oh, this happens with all fan bases. Does this happen with all fan bases, Chuck? Let's be honest.
Well, I've never heard of anything and nothing like somebody poisoning trees. I mean, that's a felonious act. I mean,
are dads out there shooting their sons because, you know, they asked to borrow the car keys after an Alabama loss? You know, I mean, these are things that have happened.
Dad?
Mom happened. We've seen the video. Okay, we've seen it. That doesn't happen in other games.
But that's not the university's responsibility.
They have some responsibility in that. They have some responsibility in it.
You're wrong.
And they should have to come off the cakes and pay the $800,000 that he owes.
Should Nick Saban pay it?
Somebody should. He's got it. What, Nick can't check
the – I didn't say he didn't have it.
He can't check the ashtray in one of his Mercedes. And he can't like – shake out his couch cushions and find $800,000. What is $800,000 to Nick Saban?
He can't check the car seats of the Dodge Chargers he's been giving out. What was that? I'm just kidding.
Duffel bags.
That's a joke.
You know, I'm sure they got
just kidding.
Grocery sack full of cash somewhere. I'm just saying. I mean, am I wrong? The university has some responsibility in this.
No, that's personal responsibility. That's personal responsibility.
He did it. Harvey Updike poisoned those trees, right?
They did. Who was the AD at the time? Malmore? Malmore did not go to Harvey Updike and say.
They have something to do with creating the culture there and these nut jobs that walk around as Alabama fans, okay? I'm just telling you. There's something there. It's different. It's not like any other school. You tell me another school that has that problem that they have with their fan base. And don't just say, oh, they're popular, so they have more crazy fans than other people. You've seen it. You know it, just like I do. The funniest thing to me in the world is Alabama fans who went to Alabama and sidewalk alum Alabama fans. They hate each other. Have you ever seen a fan base where the sidewalk alum and the actual alum hate each other as much as Alabama fans do?
Yeah, that's.
Tell me I'm wrong. I mean, tell me I'm wrong.
I've never thought about it, but there's no bigger sidewalk alumni. So, you know, right.
But a lot of the sidewalk alum are a little bit on the crazy side, and the university has to hold some responsibility for this.
No, they don't. That is not. Wouldn't that be a nice, I can't tell if you're serious. Nice, I think you're tongue in cheek, but
wouldn't that be a nice olive branch? I'm always serious when I talk about Alabama.
No, that's true.
Okay. Uh-huh. I'm 100% always serious when I talk about Alabama. There may be some comedy in it, but I'm always serious when I talk about Alabama. Wouldn't that be a nice olive branch thing to do if you were the University of Alabama?
It's been rectified. They've already got new trees planted. I mean, I don't, you know, are you talking about them paying the court costs?
Somebody should have broke off the $100,000.
And cover Harvey Updike? No, Harvey Updike. Somebody should have responsible for that.
Somebody
he didn't pay.
They're responsible. They're responsible for that guy that has that giant Bear Bryant tattoo on his back. They're responsible for the guys that stand there with the box of Tide and the roll of toilet paper. All those crazy people. They're responsible for every single one of them.
I'm not wrong,
and I will not. I will not back down on this issue. You're completely wrong.
All right. I just can't. What in the world are you thinking to do that?
Poison trees?
Yeah. How do you come up with that idea?
Well, what do you?
I mean, really? How do you come up with that idea?
This is exactly what I'm talking about, Chuck. What do you mean?
Well, they don't have a class at Alabama that says how to get back at Auburn.
Do you remember?
Not to my knowledge.
We went to a game at Alabama. It was you, myself, and Jim Duncan.
Don't you remember how nice they were to you?
Do you remember the story I'm about to tell?
Drunk.
Do you remember the story I'm about to tell?
Yes.
Okay. And we were sitting in the car. We were in traffic. We were on University Avenue, right? Yep. We're in a marked news car,
right?
We're sitting there. And there was a car that rolled up next to us.
Yeah.
And there was a lady, must have been 70 years old, hanging out the side of the car. She pulled the Marlboro from her lips and said, "Y'all get on back to Mississippi now." I was appalled. I was like, seriously? Seriously.
We had the same thing happen at LSU, similar. We pulled up
They got their own issues. I'm not saying they don't.
Right? Yeah, and they said there ain't gonna be no story here, and then Tuberville took a Ole Miss to LSU.
You remember the time at LSU when I got lippy with the guy about when Jackson State was playing down there in the baseball regional. You remember that situation?
Oh yeah. I was already upset because I was hot. But you ate 17 ice creams that day.
Oh, those frozen banana things were good. Those things were really good.
Guy was getting about these teams being in the regionals and stuff like that. Yeah. I remember that. Go sit down. Who was that? Me, you, and who? Who else was with us?
Might have been Matthews. Was it Matthews?
I don't know. I think it was Matthews.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I get it. I mean, I get that the bigger schools are going to – and I agree with when Bama fans try to use that as an excuse. Yes, all fan bases have that percentage of fans that they don't want to claim. It's normally about 5% of fans.
Yeah.
Tell me Bama's isn't a little larger than 5%. Tell me it's more like 25% of their fans are extra obnoxious and do crazy stuff. I'm not talking about like just being an over-the-top fan. I mean, you know, they've got 25% Phyllis's over there.
Ooh.
You know, Harvey Updike, come on. I mean, he's just the poster child for it. But come on. I love Bama fans. You know I do.
No, you don't. No, you don't. Let's get into some NFL here. The Saints have signed linebacker Nigel Bradham with the Eagles for, what, 4 or 5 years, something like that?
Yeah, he had a nice old run with the Eagles, right?
So, but your question is, are teams going to trust rookies?
Yeah, because I when you look at the Saints roster, especially their defense, you know, they're really good up front. The secondary is pretty good. It was the linebacking core that I think had to have them concerned. So I think this is, you know, one of those signings that, you know, will kind of go under the radar and not a lot of people will spend a lot of time about or think about much.
But he's a 10-year veteran. I mean, he's a 9-year veteran. He's coming into his 10th year. I mean, having played in Buffalo and Philly, I mean, that's always a good fallback.
Yeah, but I mean, when you look at that depth chart from the Saints, especially at the linebacker position, I mean, you got DeMario Davis, who's been a great signing for them, local guy to Brandon. Yeah. You know, I mean, but he's been really good since coming over from the Jets. But you know, you look at the rest of that linebacker core. I mean, you know, Kiko Alonso, Alex Anzalone. I mean, do they have one knee between the two of them? I'm not really sure. You know, the rest of their roster, you really question. I mean, you got rookie Zach Bond coming in. You got Craig Robertson. You got Anthony Ciccolo. I'm not sold on any of their other linebackers. And, you know, if, you know, they have an injury or two, I'd be seriously concerned about that linebacking position. That's why I think this Nigel Bradham signing, where a lot of people won't even – they'll be like, oh, Nigel Bradham, whatever. Won't think twice about it. I think that's a great signing for them. And again, it got me thinking about, you know, the NFL and this situation that we're in. I mean, you're talking no off-season stuff. I mean, I know they had meetings and that kind of stuff. I would expect less impact from rookies this year than we've probably ever seen, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you're going to have no preseason. You're going to have no training camp, really. To speak of, I mean, not a typical training camp where you got guys get reps and that kind of stuff. I just don't see where teams are going to trust a bunch of rookies. And I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, between players opting out that we've seen here recently and teams maybe not trusting rookies as much. I mean, they may be forced to trust some rookies, but it might be kind of shaky here, and I think your teams that are more veteran-based teams are going to be the ones that have more success, and I wouldn't be surprised if teams, you know, really, you know, adjust their rosters a little bit or look to areas where maybe they would feel like in a normal season, you know, well, we've got young talent here, and we feel like that, you know, maybe by week 4, week 5, they're going to be up to speed and we're going to be okay. You know, we'll take our lumps early. I don't know if people are going to be able to do that this year. You know, I think rookies are going to be put in a position to where, you know, if we have to play them, we'll play them. But, you know, we'll get people some reps, that kind of stuff. But I just – if you're relying on a rookie this year or you're relying on – a rookie for major depth at a particular position, I think you've got some issues on your hands.
So, and that rolls into a discussion of how COVID is affecting the NFL as well.
Right.
And rosters that we've seen with teams with voluntary opt-outs.
Yeah.
And there's a short list, but I mean, it's growing.
Yeah. Well, the Patriots had 6 guys opt out.
Yeah.
Which
including former Ole Miss player Brandon Bolden.
Yeah. I've got a theory with the Patriots.
Here we go.
I think they're paying people under the table to opt out.
There we go.
I think they're trying to lose for Lawrence.
Why?
They didn't draft the quarterback this year.
Yeah. Huh? Yeah. Okay, go ahead. Just keep going.
I'm just saying. I think they're trying to put themselves in striking distance. This would be the year to go all in on, you know, whatever guy you feel is a sure thing.
I don't I don't.
Because the draft might be a serious crapshoot this year if we end up canceling a bunch of games and that kind of stuff.
Oh, it's going to be a crapshoot. There's no question about
it. I mean, it always is, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, yes, higher than usual. How about that? So
I thought it was funny. You know, it's, you know, we've talked about it last week, us being Seahawk fans. I was listening to an interview with their GM, John Schneider, and he was talking to what's his name? NFL right, Peter King. Peter King asked him, like, well, how do you prepare? You know, it's going to be chaos with, you know, what's going on with college football and if they're going to play in the spring and this and that, blah, blah, blah. He's like, how do you prepare for the draft? How are you going to even put this together? He's like, well, you trade in your first and third round draft picks. That way you don't have to worry about it, which I thought was kind of a funny answer. But, you know, it we could have some chaos on our hands for down the road even.
Yeah, I mean, but some of these players that we're looking at, some of the names, I mean, is there anybody that stands out? There's no quarterback. There's no big, no
what
real
are you talking huge, about?
That opted out. There's no.
Oh, you know,
talking about the opting out still. You're the one that went Seahawk talk on us, not me.
No, I. Okay.
Just messing with you. So, I mean, Marquise Goodwin for the Eagles.
You've had a couple of guys that are, you know, Damian Williams for the Chiefs. I mean, he's their starting running back. They did draft the running back.
They had an offensive lineman too, Tardiff, that has opted out. I mean,
so they've had a couple of starters. I mean, they're two starters down. The Bears, Eddie Goldman, they had a starter. So, I mean, you know, there's people who've lost some starters. It's been a lot of lower level players and maybe some backups. But again, you know, like we were talking about, I mean, depth is going to be extra important this year.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be more important because look, I think there's going to be every single week teams are going to be, you know, losing this guy or losing that guy or having to go without this guy and, you know, having to move. I mean, that's why the roster's expanded. That's why they're going to have a 16 person practice squad. So they can slide guys in and out. And I think you're going to have to, you know, the quote-unquote roster construction this year, you know, the guys that are in charge of putting that stuff together are really going to have to they're really going to earn their money this year.
So what's the fallout for those guys? Do you think there's – for next year? Like, just out of curiosity, I've been thinking about this. Are they going to be given the stink eye when they come back into camp?
That's what I wondered. I wonder if, and that was one of the aspects I wanted to get into, and who would give them the stink eye? Would it be
I don't think the players would. I don't think the players would. I wonder if they lose their status in terms of.
I wonder if like teams would.
Is it going to be held against them?
Well, that's what I wonder. I mean, I don't know, and I'd have to say that there would probably be, you know, teams and other players that would. I think a lot of guys wouldn't. I mean, I think it's, you know, I mean, some of these guys, the situation and that kind of stuff. I mean, if you've had a family member die of this, or if you've got really, really young kids at the house, or your wife is pregnant, or you're, you know, any kind of, you know, say you got elderly parents that you're taking care of. I mean, you know. These guys, we think of these guys, oh, they're NFL players or whatever sport, but, you know, they got families. They're just like everybody else when it comes to that stuff. And, you know, if you have family concerns and that, you know, I could see where you would take the opt-out or at least consider taking the opt-out. And that's why I don't think people should use, you know, hold that against them and that kind of stuff. But
you know how cutthroat of a business it is.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. I don't know if teams would look at it as like, well, is this guy all about himself or does he really care about playing that much? You know how how these coaches are and teams are. I mean, they want these guys that are going to run through a wall 24/7. You know, they want somebody that's going to, you know,
well, what's a year off do for drinking too?
Well, and that's the other thing you have to look at.
I'm for them if they I think it's a personal decision, and if they feel they need to do it, I just wonder what the what the back end consequences of that would be, or the fallout of that would be.
Well, let me ask you, let's put ourselves in that situation. All right, everybody laugh for a second. Us as professional athletes, but in that situation, let's say you're relatively financially secure. You know, you're not like Tom Brady you're not Drew Brees or whatever, but let's just say you're a 5-6 year guy and you've made a decent amount of cash in the league. You're not, you know, super rich. You're not whatever. Would you be trying to play, or would you be opting out for the year?
I think it would be dependent on family situation.
Well, like, take your own family situation of what you have right now.
Well, I wouldn't be a 24-year-old, 5-year veteran with a 25, 22, and 18-year-old.
You know what I mean. You got 3 kids. You know what I'm saying.
The wife's a little immunocompromised.
Right.
From some of her medical stuff. I would have to give it some serious consideration.
Yeah. I'd have a hard time not doing it. I would have a hard time opting out.
It would have to be a serious consideration, though, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Oh, I would take a serious consideration. I mean, I would have to, you know, but I do think that I would, but that would be my concern. I would be concerned of, I'm going to lose my slot. I'm going to lose my, you know, I miss out on a year. I take a year off. What is that going to do for my career? You know, what is that going to do for where I'm at right now? And if I'm a 5 or 6 year guy, you know, can I risk, you know, I'm close to pension age at that point. What do you got to go 7 years to get your pension? You know, can I take a year? You know, I mean, a guy like Damian Williams, take that for example. We always talk about running backs and the short amount of time that running backs have anyway to take, you know, oh, they're all done by the age of 30. You know, 30, they're done, you know, except for Adrian Peterson.
And Frank Gore.
But you have to, I would have to be sitting there, like, if I've got this short window.
Yeah.
You know, I just won a Super Bowl. That's great. And I kind of want to be there when they put the banner up and I get my ring and all that stuff. I don't know. I don't know how you, I mean, I get it. I mean, but it's a personal decision, and I don't think that the teams or any other players should kill any of these guys for making that decision.
No, I don't think they will, but what's the backroom talk on some of this, and what's the backroom fallout with some of this? And that's what my curiosity is.
You talk about it being a cutthroat business. Again, I would be so afraid that somebody's going to – I mean,
right.
Those guys, like, they have to sleep with one eye open. You know what I mean? You constantly have somebody behind you trying to take your spot, whether it's a young rookie, whether it's this, whether it's that.
Right.
I would be extremely concerned about somebody. You know, if I get – my thought process would be is, if I got out, would I ever be able to get back in? And that would be my concern. Well,
for each position, there's only 32 of each starting position in the NFL. You know, there's only 32 starting left tackles. There's only 32 starting centers. There's only 32 quarterbacks. I mean, so these jobs are rare and they're precious, and because they pay really, really well.
Sure. No, that's what I'm saying. I mean, like, if you were a guy that's been in the league, like, let's say a decade, and you've made your money, and, you know, let's say you've won a Super Bowl or whatever, you've done everything that you're sure you want to do more, and sure, you could always stack some more money, and sure, you could always, but if I was really secure in my position and secure with my career, like, I know I could walk away today and I'm happy with whatever thing I've done in the game and I'm financially secure and all that, I'd really consider it at that point. I really would. But again, it would depend on where my status was in the game.
Yeah. I think that would be, you know, that would be the, that would be the, the, the thing where you are in your career would probably have a big determinant about it. Can you imagine this conversation being in the 60s, 70s, and 80s? You know, that, what do you mean guys are checking out? They're opting out, you know? All right, we'll find somebody else to replace.
Well, I mean, there would be that. I mean, and then, you know, but again, if you went back that far, I mean, even though those jobs paid really well back then, you know, we don't have to go back too far.
They didn't pay that well.
Guys that, that had to have jobs in the off season. So, you know, I mean,
yeah.
It's, yeah.
Yeah. So the NFL released their top 100 players.
Right.
I think it's one of the worst
exercise
things
every year.
I just can't stand it. I don't know what you, if you like it or what, but
I don't really like it, but I always pay attention to it. And I like to watch the videos. I like the little video packages that they do for it.
People talking about the players.
Yeah. What I don't like is normally the way they stretch the thing out. It normally takes forever.
Yeah. They do it over like they do like 10 weeks of it, I think.
Yeah, that's the part I don't really like.
They did it quicker this year, though, didn't they?
Yeah, I'm fine with that. Just roll the list out here and let me look at it, and we'll go from there. But
where do you want to start? Well, let's start at the top. Okay. Because I got some questions.
All right.
So Lamar Jackson is number one.
Number
Ravens quarterback.
Yeah. Yep.
Russell Wilson is number two, Seahawks quarterback.
I'd say that's the first time Russell Wilson probably got the respect on this list that he deserved.
Well, and I don't even think Russell Wilson should be number one. So let's even though
I don't think he should be number one. No. I'm saying
he should be above Lamar Jackson, though.
That's the first time. We'll go ahead and do the top five, and then we'll go from there.
Aaron Donald, Rams defensive end.
Three. Yep.
He's the only defensive player in the top eight.
And he's been there a while and probably deserving of that.
You know, he's a nightmare. Patrick Mahomes at number four, Chiefs quarterback.
I would have flip-flopped Mahomes and Lamar Jackson. Like that would be if I could make one fix on this list, I would put Mahomes at one and Lamar Jackson at four. And remember, the players vote on this list.
Yeah.
So, I'm a little confused at why the players have Mahomes at four. I with the year he had, the number he put up, is it that they feel like he has an embarrassment of riches to work with? Is it, like, what is the –
what is it about this guy that has him – I don't know.
I don't know how
Lamar Jackson is number one at this point. Let me tell you, he's a top five. There's no question about that.
Do you still have some
concerns about him after the playoffs?
Well, he hasn't won a playoff game. I mean, what? He's like 19-3 as a starter, and he's 0-2 in the playoffs. I mean, that
and he didn't look very good
at that point. No, he hasn't. I mean, I'll excuse it when he was a rookie.
Yeah.
But year two? You got to play a little bit better than the players. And like I said, he's unbelievable. He makes dazzling plays. He's fun to watch. I love watching him. I got nothing against the kid. I just, again, we're getting to that point where he's got to do something in the playoffs. I'm not saying you got to win. I'm not saying you got to win the Super Bowl next year. I mean, you know, if, again, you're the Ravens, you would hope that you get it on his rookie contract and that kind of stuff and make it kind of like a Mahomes deal, you know, but I just was a little shocked that, you know, now if you were saying players you want to watch, you know, I mean, like if you were turn
I
this
still
list
think
into
Mahomes a, is the one
I would put Mahomes over him still, but I mean, I could, you could definitely make that argument of guys you want to watch. I'd say he's right there, but I was a little shocked that he was number one on that list.
I would even put, even though Russell Wilson seems like he goes to sleep some games, you know, I would put Wilson.
It's not always his fault, but
over Lamar Jackson. Yeah, some of it's play calling, but I would put him over Lamar Jackson.
And like I said, I mean, look, as far as I'm concerned, we can go back on this list And I think Russell Wilson's been one of the more underrated players on this list for years and years and years. He's finally getting the respect he deserves on this list.
And probably, yeah, he should have gotten it a lot earlier. He should have gotten it a lot earlier and maybe even been lower this year.
But again, I think that's, you know, some of the argument of, you know, and I guess that's the argument that some people would have. Well, Lamar Jackson won the MVP. That's why I would put him over, you know, this guy or that guy. I don't know how you put him over Mahomes. I don't see that. I get how you have Aaron Donald up in that mix because, you know, you don't want to have it all quarterbacks. I understand that. You want to have a defensive player up there that high. I get it. But that was my initial problem that I have with the list. Other than that, there wasn't a ton that I was just like, oh, my God, this is terrible. But go ahead.
Well, Michael Thomas is the top Saints player at number 5.
Yep.
Which is pretty high. Then Christian McCaffrey, Panthers running back at number 6.
I'm good with both those guys where they are.
George Kittle at 7, the 49ers tight end.
That's a little high for me. I mean, look, I think George Kittle's a whale of a tight end. I think he's a great player. I mean, don't get me wrong. I have no problem with George Kittle. You know, I mean, you want to say he's the number one tight end. Okay, that's fine.
Is that rivalry hatred spewing out, or is that? I think he's pretty impressive. Is he a 7th best player in the league?
You have him over DeAndre Hopkins?
No, probably not.
I mean, here's a guy I don't like, but compare the year that he had last year. I mean, Derrick Henry, you got him over Derrick Henry at this point?
Probably not.
I don't know. Look, George Kittle is tough to stop, and he's a heck of a player, and he's, you know, I'm not taking anything away from him either. I just, you know, I could easily see him 14th on this list, you know, and wouldn't have, like, if he would have been like in the high teens, 18, 19, I wouldn't have been like, oh, George Kittle's being disrespected. You know what I'm saying? I just think 7's a little high.
Let's do a couple. Drew Brees is at number 12.
That's a good spot for Drew.
Tom Brady, 14. Aaron Rodgers, 16.
How is Tom Brady at 14 at this point?
How is he above Aaron Rodgers? I mean, how is he above Deshaun Watson, who's number 20?
I don't know how Tom – I mean, is this a we don't want to motivate Tom, so we just put him at 14? Like, it's like, oh, God, we'll have to hear all this Tom Brady crap if we put him too far down the list. So
he may get motivated.
Just put him up there at 14, and that way, you know, he'll realize – because, yeah, and the thing you have to remember about this list is it's the top 100 players of 2020. So it's what people think –
it's going to be.
They're going to kind of do and not, you know, what they did last year. So, I guess that's some of the, you know, maybe Lamar Jackson stuff, but, you know, anyway.
Kamara at 42. Dak
he had at a really 46. He had a really down year.
Yeah, he for did. What he didn't have a great year. Out of
Kamara. I just, you know, who was at 46? I'm sorry.
Dak Prescott. I think that's a little low.
You remember Dak was really high last year. Remember that?
Yeah.
It's funny because, you know, he puts up a better statistical this year and he's down farther. I, you know, does that tell you maybe what
I guess
some of the other players around the league think about him? I mean, I don't know.
All right, let's move on to some baseball here.
Find
the list on NFL.com.
Yeah, hang on, just to wrap that up though. I think it's one of those lists that's fun to look at and it's fun to do. And like I said, I love the little vignettes. That's the thing that I really like about the list more than anything else.
Yeah,
just going back and watching all the
All the love the players give everybody.
Yeah.
So baseball's going on. We had a situation that Major League Baseball wasn't real happy with the other night with Dodgers relief pitcher Joe Kelly. Who was it, Correa he was throwing at?
Well, he threw Bregman first.
Oh, and then he had a couple. I didn't realize that.
Oh yeah, yeah. You got to go back and watch the whole sequence. But look, let's be honest. I mean, Joe Kelly does not have the best control in the world. I mean, you can go back and watch the video of him, preparing at his house this summer, and there's like this giant net he's trying to throw the ball into, and he misses and smashes a window at his house. You got to go watch that. That's a good video to watch.
I think I've seen that actually. So, but I did not draw the parallel. I did not know who that was. I thought it was some sort of goof.
So he's a guy that has had some control issues. You know what I mean? I mean, he's had some, but he throws a 3-0 pitch. Maybe he was frustrated. I don't know, but it's like right at Bregman's head. It goes over his head behind him. You know, and then so Bregman's first, and he throws three rockets over to first base, like trying to pick him off, like Bregman's going anywhere. You know what I mean? One, I mean, he wasn't going anywhere, but so there was that. And then he ends up striking out Correa, but he, fired one behind him too. Yeah. And, and then as he was walking off the field, was just really mouthy. With the Astros and that kind of stuff. And there's this, big kind of brouhaha, everybody, the teams come together, so to speak there. And, lo and behold, Joe Kelly, who didn't hit anybody in that situation, ended up with an 8-game suspension in a 60-game season, which it works out to, like, if this was a regular season.
I mean, two games. He's not a starter. He'll miss.
He's a reliever.
So he can't. Yeah. He might not pitch in seven of those anyway.
Right. Well, again, though, he's going to miss what essentially would be like a 21-game suspension for not hitting anybody. And I think there's a couple reasons. I mean, obviously, this was the first time. People are getting a shot at the Astros. So, people are going to – we all know the unwritten rules in baseball and all that stuff. People are going to take their shots. So, is this Rob Manfred going – for two reasons. Is this him going big on the suspension to be like, look, we can't have people plunking Astros all year long? And on top of that, we also can't have teams coming together – in bench clearing brawls.
Yeah, I think that's got as
not a lot of social distancing going on there. You know, what happens if there's something that, again, we're not socially distancing? It's funny because there's one guy, if you watch that, when those two teams are coming together, I think it's somebody on the Astros, and he's wearing a mask. And as those two teams are converging on each other, that guy just bails. He's like, I'm not going to be here for to catch COVID from whoever's running up out here.
Yeah.
With this. So I think the suspension was kind of unfair though. And I have
how do you judge pitching suspensions? Because they're not like regular game, everyday player suspensions. I mean, he may not pitch in those games anyway.
But if this was a 162-game season, is a 21-game suspension fair for not hitting anybody? He didn't hit anybody. I understand he threw at people. He didn't even get thrown out of the game. They never got warned. I mean, there was, it's just surprising to me that they gave him that kind of a suspension. And again, the other part that's amazing out of this, if you listen to all the talking heads and you listen to everybody out there, everybody's like, good, hit them. I don't feel sorry for the Astros. I'm not going to feel sorry for any of their players. Yeah. Their players need to shut up. Their players need to take their medicine. I mean, it's, and I don't think this is helping their cause. I really think if they took a couple of plunkings, dusted themselves off, went to first base, kept their mouth shut, I think people would be like, all right, they respect it and move on, and it would be done. You know what I mean? Like, just get it over with. You know, I don't think everybody's going to take a shot at him, you know, but I don't think Rob Manfred can protect them from this. And speaking of which, I mean, you know, we're talking about this. Joe Kelly's like everybody's favorite player now. I mean, everybody loves Joe Kelly now. It's crazy. You should go see it. They got T-shirts that people are printing. They got, I mean, it's amazing how many people are like in love with Joe Kelly all of a sudden now. Which is just funny to me. But, I mean, Major League Baseball handled this wrong with the Astros, did they not? By not suspending any players, by not – I mean, should they have vacated – should they have vacated the World Series?
No.
You don't think they should have taken it away?
No, I don't think so.
I don't think they should have taken the trophy away.
I don't think that's a solution. I think you can suspend people. You can keep people out of the league for an amount of time.
It's not a perfect solution by any means because yeah, they still won the World Series. But I mean, if you put so much shame,
still got to hit the pitches.
Great. If I have a buzzer that tells me which one's coming, or I'm listening to somebody rap on a trash can,
still got to. I just don't. I thought about that long and hard when all that was coming out. I just don't know because what would that lead to?
What does that lead to? They got caught red-handed cheating.
I understand. What would that lead to? Here we're getting ready hopefully to have a Patriots stop, discussion. I can tell you.
Hopefully, it would stop that. What kind of Pandora's box would that open up?
I mean,
it would be such an embarrassment. Do you think they should take the title
from them?
I think they should take the trophy back. I think they should vacate it. Nobody won the World Series that year. Yeah, I really do. And I think if they did that, I think maybe people would have been, you know, you wouldn't have guys lining up to throw it, you know, Carlos Correa's head. You know what I'm saying?
Maybe they suspended him because he broke his own window.
You wouldn't have Joe Kelly mouthing walking off the field.
You shouldn't be in the major leagues. You're breaking your own window in your backyard.
I don't know.
I've debated.
Dr. Fauci would have hit the net.
I don't like it when they take wins from teams in any sport, in any level.
I'm not a huge fan of that. No, I don't like it when we're talking about it for colleges and we're talking about, hang on. There is a huge difference. You tell me there's not a difference because there's not a national champion in college football that hasn't had a player on their team that somebody's gotten money or somebody got paid or somebody whatever. That's why it makes no sense to do it there. You know, it makes no sense to, oh, well, USC got caught, so we'll do that. Go tell me that nobody on Alabama's getting paid or nobody on Oklahoma got paid or nobody.
Mention our own in-state schools here too, you know. Well,
sure, but that's my point. It's rampant. I mean, Clemson. You're going to tell me nobody on Clemson did anything illegal, right? That's one thing. Okay, that's fine. That has nothing to do with, yes, okay, great. They got talent, whatever. All those top schools have talent, okay? They still won the national championship on the field, okay? You're talking about a team that went out there and used all these – schemes and cameras and buzzers and, you know, did all this elaborate stuff cheating to tip themselves off on pitches. And you can see by the numbers how much it affected them when they were at home as opposed when they were away.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they won that World Series. And look, they could have, take all the buzzers away and take all that stuff away. They could have won the World Series possibly without all that stuff, right? But they were doing that stuff. They had a huge advantage at home in the playoffs that year, and it paid off for them in the playoffs. And like I said, I mean, if you're a Dodger fan or a Yankee fan or a Red Sox, any of the teams that played them in the playoffs, any of the teams that played them and, you know, cost yourself something, I mean, I'd be livid about it. And again, if a sport as a sport such as baseball, where they police themselves all the time and they have every little stupid unwritten rule in the world, now you're going to tell me that Rob Manfred's going to stop people from throwing at them? I mean, I really think now you're going to have guys lining up. I don't, 8-game suspension. Okay, what do I care? This season's a bust anyway. Fine, I'll put some scrub in there that I don't need to go throw at Carlos Correa or Altuve or whoever they want to throw at. But, I mean, I just think, like, this is one of those things that if Manfred would just get out of the way and let baseball handle this, I know what people are going to say. Oh, you can kill somebody by hitting them in the head. You can. And I'm not saying people should be throwing at people's heads.
It sounds like you're
I'm not saying Joe Kelly's the guy. But, I mean, you want to put something in somebody's backside or hit somebody in the back or get somebody – you know what I'm saying? I mean, and like I said, if you're the Astros, you need to take that, get up, dust yourself off, and run down the first base. And don't say a peep about it. Don't be on there crying, this and that. I mean, you know, look at what they did. Shut your mouth. Don't say anything. Take your medicine and walk it off.
You know, they when the Mariners are in town, they don't even use the cameras. They don't need them. They won like 16 in a row against Seattle. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, well, see, until there you Seattle. Go. Cheating.
I'm not for vacating titles. I think it is what it is.
Again, it depends on the situation. In this situation, I thought it would have made sense to do it. Because, again, if you really want to make it a deterrent and not have that stuff again. Yeah, I think that would have been one way of doing it. No World Series champion that year. Go melt the trophy down in front of them.
Oh, make them watch. Make them watch. Keep your head up. Watch this. Yeah. All right. Okay, let's get to the album of the week.
Oh, yeah, well, hang on. All right, I'm going to
yeah.
Ready here. All right.
Completion Backwards Principle by the Tubes
Why have you – this whole episode, you've been like – your segues have been – you've been segue challenged in this episode.
Trying to corral, you know. I'm the sheepdog. You're the sheep. I'm trying to keep
you back in the corral. I know, but I mean, I'm corral. Just saying you've been like – we're lurching wildly from one topic to another. Yeah. All right. Anyway,
it's awkward.
The album of the week. How about the Doors? How about that? Mm-hmm. Their first album, self-titled album. I mean, you got Break On Through, Soul Kitchen, 20th Century Fox, Alabama Song, Light My Fire, Backdoor Man. I mean, this is a great album. The End. A great song. I heard some Doors this morning, and I'm going to go dig in, but that first Doors album is just absolutely amazing. So, like I said, I'm going to slap that one on the turntable today and crank that.
That's another one of those bands that I didn't appreciate till much later in life. Like Jimi Hendrix and the Doors.
Right.
Probably even Zeppelin. Well, I know Zeppelin.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but it just like later in life, and I'm talking about 40s probably. In my 40s is when I started to appreciate them.
You would think I would hate them because I got punched in the guts when I was like in the fifth grade for not knowing like some Doors songs or whatever.
What?
Had a guy. Yeah, it was a guy in school that was a huge Doors fan. He was like an eighth grader. And he like asked me what my favorite Doors song was. And I was like, I don't know. I'm in the fifth grade over here. And he like hauled off and punched me in the guts. I mean, like knocked the wind out of me the whole nine yards. Hard. You think I'd hate the Doors, but actually I love the Doors. It taught me to love the Doors.
You're gonna hunt that guy down and go back and punch him?
No, I mean I think actually we somehow became friendly after that. I don't know. There was something.
Yeah, because you kept giving him your lunch money.
No, it was like, I mean, our parents were like, you know, did something with the town, like, you know, sports teams and stuff. I ended up like, I ended up kind of being friendly with the guy. Yeah, he hauled off and wailed me because I didn't know, like, I think he had, yeah, he asked me what my favorite Doors song was. I think I said, I don't know. I don't have one. And he did not like that answer. I can tell you that much.
I have known you probably 25 years now, and I've never heard that story.
Never heard that story? Yeah, we need to have – I could do a whole – we could do a whole episode on, like, stories from St. Joe's where I went to – where I went to
– we could, you know, but we won't.
You know, we used to have this – we used to have these – all right, so in the 7th and 8th grade, you were on the other side of the school, right? And on the back side of where the – so it was like a little courtyard area where we all hung out before they opened the school and stuff.
Yeah.
And there was a – there was like these entrances. It was like two cement staircases that went down into the locker rooms that we didn't use in the back of the gymnasium. And that was we called it the spit pit, okay, because everybody spit down there. Right. But you had to keep your book bag like wired tight because if you like, you know, like there were people that would go around and if you just left your book bag lying around, they'd get it and throw it down there and then you'd have to go retrieve it.
Yeah.
And be dodging people spitting on you while you were having to retrieve your book bag. So, yeah, you had to like. And don't let it happen in the wintertime because those steps were, like, super icy. I remember guys, like, trying to go down there and they'd fall and be, like, laying at the bottom. Meanwhile, there's spit raining down on them. Oh, it was horrible.
That's gross.
I didn't say it was – you couldn't do it in COVID days.
No. Yeah, well, they 5th and 6th, 7th, 8th graders, they don't care about COVID. You know, they spit on you.
You don't want to mess with the spit pit. I'm just telling you.
All right. You got a quarantine stream for us before we wrap up here?
I do. All right. You know what I've been doing a lot lately? What? I looked up some, I don't know. I came across a Conan O'Brien video, like from his TV show. Oh, yeah. I haven't watched his TV show in a long time on TBS. I just haven't watched it. I like watched one video that he did. I spent like 4 hours straight Conan videos laughing like crazy.
I'm
gonna start watching his show again. I mean, I don't think he has his show anymore. Yeah, they're still doing it. I think they're doing the quarantine.
I thought he quit for a while. I thought he had gone to do something else or that he was doing something. I may be completely wrong. I thought I saw him say goodbye that they weren't going to do this, but he may still be on TBS doing. It's not the same interview format show.
It's a different. I think they're doing the
That's
show
right. That's
differently.
Right. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I think they're doing. I think they are doing that. But
yeah,
and most of the stuff that I was coming across that's really funny is him just messing with his staff. It's really really good stuff, especially his. Personal assistant, the relationship he has with her
I've seen some of that actually, it's
pretty funny stuff. But yeah, that's my big quarantine stream is YouTube and Conan O'Brien videos. And then definitely go watch the one with him, Kevin Hart, and Ice Cube. They get like a lift they're just rolling around in this lift. It's pretty funny.
Yeah. All right, I'll check that out. Mine
from a few years back, but
mine is you know, I've revisited the you know, the mockumentaries, Best in Show, Waiting for Guffman, A Mighty Wind.
Right.
I've started rewatching those. Those still stand up to me. Those are still very funny.
I need to watch those because I never watched the. Waiting for Guffman, and I don't think I watched
Mighty Wind.
I saw Best in Show.
Yeah.
I did not see Mighty Wind. I saw Best in Show, but I need to definitely check those out.
Yeah, they're entertaining. They're still entertaining to me. All right. Chuck and Doug Reloaded is produced by Mississippi Scoreboard. Be sure to subscribe via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcast. Don't forget to go and give us a rating, a good rating, yeah, if you will.
I'll have more horrible Catholic school stories for you next week.
That's our next podcast name.
Yeah.
Horrible Catholic school stories.
Oof. Man, I got a ton of them.
Yeah. Like in
Nuns Blues were nothing Brothers, nice to
the
me.
Penguin, the Penguin.
Man, I could tell you some stories about some nuns.
For more on Mississippi Scoreboard, you can find them at MississippiScoreboard.com, on Facebook at Mississippi Scoreboard, and on Twitter at Mississippi Scoreboard. That's at MS Scoreboard. Sorry. That's it for this edition of Chuck and Doug Reloaded. Thanks for listening, everybody.